Getting tickets online can be far too complicated. With hundreds of sites and varying levels of reliability, it's hard to know who to trust. That's why SeatGeek is a way to go. SeatGeek pulls millions of tickets into one place so you can easily find the seats you want for the price you're willing to pay. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. Every purchase on the SeatGeek app is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to ticket source for everything from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. I actually have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I found to shop for tickets. I actually just used SeatGeek to buy tickets to a concert that my wife wanted to go to. Really easy to use. Best of all, my listeners get $10 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code USC today. That's promo code USC for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, life's an event. We have the tickets.
Hey, Trojan fans. It's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast / Tunnel Vision. We're doing a little special episode here in studio with Keely Yore, Dan Weber, and myself, Ryan Abraham. We're live on the Periscope and on Facebook. I don't think on YouTube for some reason. But we were just going to do our regular Peristyle Podcast, and we just said at the last minute, really in like the last 5 minutes, let's do it live as well because Dan Weber came into studio. We're going to do a regular Peristyle Podcast show. We'll record it and put it up on the Peristyle Podcast channels and all that, but we're also going to do Tunnel Vision at the same time because we got a lot of breaking news of everything that's going on. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you have any questions or comments, our regular email address, podcast@uscfootball.com. You can send us an email, any questions you have. We're probably not going to do a lot of email questions and stuff today because we got all the news to talk about, but you can also text or call 424-254-9141. Again, apologize for my voice. It's been rough the last couple of days. And we get to do that live, so it's fun. But welcome to everyone in the studio. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Doing good.
Glad to have Dan in the studio. That's a first.
We didn't know. So we were going to just do a regular podcast show, and then Dan came. So we're like, well, we tried to do this last week. It didn't work.
I was looking for a football practice, and there aren't any on Tuesdays anymore. So got to hang out somewhere.
Yeah. I don't know if I don't think YouTube is up. But no. Okay. Well, sorry about that. But looks like Periscope is going. Yeah, we got Periscope going. Wow, we got a lot of people on Periscope. I don't know what's going on with YouTube. We just tried to do that at the last minute too. So sorry, we'll figure that out at some point. But for our Thursday show, we'll make sure we get all that straightened up. We got Facebook going, and it's our regular podcast like we're normally going to do. But man, so a lot of news that happened today. I was in studio in here earlier shooting a couple of videos. We reported last week that former Texas Tech head coach Cliff Kingsbury was set, had a deal in place, all but signed at USC. There was some pushback from other members of the media. People around USC still seem to be pretty confident. I think he did, entertain some offers from the NFL, took the weekend to kind of check all that stuff. But we knew this was going to be a really good situation for Cliff Kingsbury. And it's not been officially announced by USC yet, but everything we've heard, like before, pretty much, is going to happen, and more media members now. I don't think there's any more problem with the agent. It looks like USC is going to go forward and have Cliff Kingsbury, which is a huge get because USC doesn't make hires like that. They make hires that are, graduate assistant upgrades and stuff. This was the biggest fish in the sea, and USC got it.
Yeah, I mean, they're awfully confident. So let's hope their confidence is well grounded. This is Pete Carroll walking through the door and saying, please hire me. Those other three or four guys that don't want to come here, I really do. Pete Carroll saw USC was his way back.
Yeah.
For Cliff Kingsbury, and I wrote it last week, I think this is by far the best deal for him. I think probably get the most money. But I think that's kind of a side issue. I think what it says is Cliff Kingsbury looked at USC's talent and what they've got coming back and the kind of impact he could have with his offense and then, you know, the quarterback and the wide receivers that USC has and on the, you know, under the spotlight. As much as he did at Texas Tech, how many times do you remember what happened in Lubbock? I mean, it just, you know, it just, as much as he did, if he has that kind of impact at USC, I mean, let's face it, their offense, if you came in purposely to sabotage USC's offense last year, you couldn't have made them any worse. Were they 82nd and 84th in scoring and in total offense? I mean,
90 in scoring, I believe.
90 in scoring.
Tied with Oregon State.
That's true. It was 26.7 or whatever. It's like you really would have been hard to sabotage them and do worse. So the ability to just come in and what, you know, how much it'll be fun to actually see a team that will run their offense every day in practice. You can't run that offense unless you actually run it in practice.
Yeah.
I mean, and none of this, well, we'll change that. This team we're playing, they've got this guy and that guy. So we have to change our whole offense this week. And next week we'll do this. And then that's, no. And you know, you won't go into the UCLA game saying, man, we're worried. They run so many plays. No. You run the plays.
Yeah.
You got better players. You run more plays. I mean, so it will change the psychology, I think. You know, yeah. And you look at, like, the schedule came out today. And as many, you know, good teams are front-loaded and whatever, you go in there and thinking, oh, they got to get ready for us, not us having to get ready for them. I mean, I do think it changes the psychology a lot. And, you know, it's the only thing probably that over this offseason could have gotten people excited about USC football,
yeah,
to be honest. Now, they need to go out and get an Ed Orgeron-type defensive line coach who, when after the third quarter at the UCLA game and guys are dancing on the field 20 yards out, would grab them by the throat and throw them up into the stands and say, if you ever do that again, and what is USC has? No, they got 40 guys dancing out on the field, and then they get shut out and beat in the fourth quarter. And they allow UCLA to say, we don't do stuff like that. We used to be the over the wall gang, not anymore. We're the tough, smart guys. Come on. So they still got work to do.
Yeah, though there's a lot of work to do. And like what we talked about before is the purge that happened. So Neil Callaway is gone. That would happen a little over a month ago. But you also lost T. Martin. Now this is the replacement for T. Martin. And this was, to me, you needed the big domino to fall first. That yes, there's 5 assistant spots open. But you needed to do this one because I think this one makes a huge difference and it might impact other people on the staff. And you know he's going to come in and he's going to be excited to work with some of the young talent. I talked to Bruce Feldman, kind of rebroke or whatever the story this morning. He's pretty close, I think, with the Kingsbury camp. And he put an article up on The Athletic talking about that he's really excited to work with the young players. That makes a lot of sense. But it's a different system. This is an air raid offense. This will not be the gumbo and all that stuff is gone. So I think that's the huge takeaway from all this is that you're going to change the offense. You're going to bring in a proven system. And it's not, even though, Kingsbury and the Mike Leach connection, Texas Tech and all that, it's not a Mike Leach sort of spread where they're not running the ball as much. This is a team that, I think our buddy Kyle Kensing tweeted out, they had more rushing touchdowns and more rushing attempts than Stanford did this year. So
certainly more than USC.
So it's more of a balanced spread with the kind of talent that you mentioned. I think it's a big deal, but it's a different kind of offense. The blocking schemes are going to be different. The spread of the offensive line is different. So you do have Tim Drevno that everyone's assuming is going to move over, take over the offensive line because he did that double duty. But to my knowledge, he hasn't really done that for a spread team. And I think it's Brandon Joseph. I forget the offensive line coach for Texas Tech. But I believe that's something that came up in Bruce's article that he could bring him along from Texas Tech. And he might, and like a guy like Kerry Colbert was coaching tight ends. They don't really use tight ends. So that's going to go away. USC doesn't use tight ends anyway. So that's not much of a change. Okay. But does Kerry Colbert coach wide receivers, or does he want to bring in somebody there? It might be a whole new offensive staff, which it wouldn't shock me.
Right, and I'm not even sure that the defensive staff is finished in terms of people coming and going. So I think, again, hopefully this is just the first step. But if you're going to try to change the culture at USC, not sure you can change it and keep half the staff. I mean,
yeah.
And how does, you know, in terms of setting up practice, how does Clay fit into this? I mean, do you still do what seem to be semi-walkthroughs at practice now, or do you do everything full speed? And who decides that? Who decides how much, how many reps they, you know, the offense gets and all that? I think that's going to be really interesting.
It will. And I think you're right. There could be more coaching moves because you needed this one to sort of happen. Maybe they stamp out. We don't know. But they, I think this is a big enough change that will change the culture. And I think the, even if they don't make more moves, I agree with you. I think more moves need to be made. But if this is big enough where it's like, okay, like you could see them trying to, you know, get by with just this. But I feel like the biggest change is going to be having a voice in the room that's done it somewhere else, that's done it a different way. To your point, hey, you know what? This is what's been really effective for me. We're going to do these drills, or we're going to practice this hard, or do whatever it is. Because there really wasn't any voice like that in the room. Now you have one, and I think that's going to be big for the whole team.
The last time USC had that guy, it was Dylan McCullough. And he didn't come in and ask somebody, what do you think I ought to do for my running back drills or whatever? He knew what to do. He did it. It was so obvious how it worked. So, I mean, you may be right. There may not be other things happen.
I think there should be.
Question there should be. The thing is, though, had Cliff Kingsbury been coaching USC's offense this year, as bad as this year was, what are they, worse, 9-3?
Probably. I mean,
at worst, 9-3, with no changes other than him running the offense, they're 9-3, probably 10-2.
Yeah, I mean.
So they don't have to improve all those others. Now, you know, if Clancy's around, you would like to say, have Clancy have signed, I will play the best players. They will be on the field. If my best tacklers are standing next to me, I'm not doing my job.
Yeah.
Get them on the field.
What do you think, Keely? What was your, put you back up on the screen.
Sorry, I'm
no, that's fine.
You're coding and making sure everything's running
smoothly
right now.
Yeah, I know. That's good. We literally just did this at the last minute, so I apologize if something's weird. But
I'm very curious what this means going forward. I know early signing day is quickly approaching, and if Cliff is the first domino, are you going to make more culture changes, as in culture firings? I mean, I agree with Dan. You can't really change everything that Lynn Swann listed in his statement to USC fans without really making sweeping changes. So I'm curious if this is it. And I'm curious how much Clay Helton will really give the keys over to Cliff. I know he's gonna say he needs to, and I'm sure that's why Cliff came for that. But that seems like in Clay Helton's history, it's hard for him to do. He kind of gets involved a little bit. How much will he separate himself? And does he become that CEO-type head coach where he lets his coordinators do what they want?
You can't mess with that. Like, that would be the disaster.
Yeah. I mean, I think they need to build the tower, bring Bear Bryant's tower from Tuscaloosa and say, that's where you are. The whole practice, you stay up there. That's how, in the old days, those guys would get up on the tower and they'd let their assistant coaches coach. It was, you know, their job was to coach the assistants, but the assistants' job was to coach the team.
Right.
And literally, you know, Bear Bryant was in that tower, and he, you know, very, you know, only toward the end, he didn't come down that much. Might not be a bad idea.
Yeah.
Got a lot of towers at USC. They could go up there and stand next to the camera.
Yeah. I think we got YouTube working. I think I started. I don't know. We'll
Did
see.
We?
But
okay.
Is it working? Or
no, I'm checking.
I'll check it. Hopefully it's working. But sorry, I don't know. There's some weird stuff going on. But yes.
It's working.
There was a little option for me to start the stream on this side. I don't know. We're playing with it. I think it changes. We're doing it all three platforms is not the easiest thing in the world, but we're trying it. So welcome, YouTube. Sorry that you came in a little bit late. We'll make sure we upload the full version of it afterwards. But
so just to reiterate, this is not USC official. This is there's more reporting that broke about Cliff, but we haven't had official word from USC yet.
No, we have not. A bunch of the USC outlets, people that cover the team, said that, you know, this was a deal was in place or you know, about to be signed, all that kind of stuff. And then some of the national reporters were, you know, getting pushback basically from Cliff Kingsbury's agent. There was some flirtation with the NFL.
I think the NFL reporters had to jump into the situation over the weekend. And they all, you know, wanted to have a little bit of, you know, a mini scoop. So they had to jump in and say, well, I think there's NFL interest here or there or wherever. That was mostly just, you know, just throwing that out there.
The best situation always did seem to be like USC. He would have had to change, like, the direction of his career. I think he can end up in the NFL. And really, with the success of a Patrick Mahomes, who was not highly recruited when he went to Texas Tech, and Cliff Kingsbury turned him into a superstar or helped him become one. I mean, seeing his success, seeing Baker Mayfield doing well, who got benched to Texas Tech by Cliff Kingsbury and then ended up going to Oklahoma and winning the Heisman Trophy. I mean, those, and he coached Johnny Manziel. He's been really good with quarterbacks, and you've kind of seen that going through. But I think it would have really changed things. I get that there was NFL interest because it's more of a copycat league. You're seeing that kind of offense be successful. But even talk about him being like an NFL head coach, to get fired, you're 5-7 at Texas Tech, and I think you're 35-40 as the head coach. And an NFL team is going to take you, you know, a week or so after you've been fired. Seems a little strange as a head coaching thing, but I could have seen an offensive coordinator deal, but this is going to work out well. It's always that adage like, hey, what's Chip Kelly going to do if you got, you know, the LA Basin talent, and we'll see what's going on at UCLA. What will Cliff Kingsbury do with 5-star wide receivers all over the place and quarterbacks?
And they're already here. So
yeah, you don't have to recruit them.
He could look at that first half of the Notre Dame game and say, ooh, this team could probably be pretty good. How many touchdowns would they have scored if Cliff Kingsbury would have been coaching that first half? It would not have been, you know, the three-point game that it was. Yes, he just has to figure out how to use what they've got to begin with. And that was always the case. I think by the end of August, it was pretty obvious this was not going to be a run-first team, no matter how much they kept saying they wanted to be or how much they wanted to balance. You know, this. I think I wrote in August that if I were them, I'd line up and throw it and just throw it and throw it and throw it and figure out how to, you know, get those guys to pass block and then take the run when it's there. But this was not going to ever be able to be a run-first team. First of all, too many mistakes, too many penalties. This team can't sustain. They've got to strike and just move the ball. Why they didn't ever play fast, I don't know. So that's one of the changes in culture, is just to come out and play fast with better athletes. Why, you know, slow the game down? It just made no sense at all that all year on offense you got guys just standing there looking over the, you know, sideline instead of going tempo and just going after them.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And, you know, to Keeley's point, how much, you know, meddling or whatever, I don't think you're bringing in a name like that. I don't think he would sign unless he was running the offense. We'll probably get some more details once they make it official, and we hopefully get a press conference. Hopefully, we can finally get to talk to Lynn Swann about all this kind of stuff. But this is a change in the direction of the program, a change in the way of doing business has not been to do something like this. So I think all the pushback that Lynn Swann got from the fan base, from the media, from everybody, I mean, national writers, one after another, writing stories about how this was a horrible, horrible decision. I think maybe if he didn't realize it going into that decision,
I don't think he did.
He realized it afterwards. And so his, you know, him and Clay Helton are tied at the hip. They're wagon and cart, you know, they're together. So the horse and wagon, not wagon and cart. They're together right now. So I think it's in Lynn Swann's best interest that Clay Helton comes out and does well. And so you want to give him all the weapons possible. And this is the biggest weapon you could get.
You know, if I would have been the head coach in Clay's situation, I would have meddled a lot more. I don't think he meddled enough in the offense last year. I mean, they ended up on third down and they didn't know who was going to call it. What do we do? And this year, I mean, you know, just come up. What is your offense?
Yeah.
What are you trying to do? How are you trying? And do you think you can change it every week? No. So I don't know that Clay's a natural meddler. I just think he was put in a situation, or put himself in a situation, where everybody was sort of meddling and not getting a right answer at all. So I think it'll be easy for him to step aside, I believe. How practice will be structured, I think, is the big key. You know, how hard, how fast, how competitive, and this is what, when you've got a Cliff Kingsbury, can say, this is how we have to do it. This is how we do it. This is how we have to do it.
Yeah.
And the defensive, you know, it could well be good for the USC defense if they have to come out and play fast. Because they'll do that now on 7-on-7, where you get the best competition of the day at USC practices was the 7-on-7 stuff. But they don't play football 7-on-7. It's not 7-on-7. So if you could come out with that kind of competition with 11-on-11, again, the 7-on-7, they went ones against ones very often. Do that with 11-on-11. I mean, you have to tackle people and knock them to the ground and all that, but you got to compete full speed, and that wasn't happening enough.
Yeah. I think on both sides of the ball now, there's a system in place. I don't feel like there was some kind of offensive system there. We didn't know, you know, you call it the gumbo. You weren't sure exactly what was going on. Some people, you know, they like Clancy Pendergast or they don't, but I always felt like there was a plan, there was a system, and this is what they're going to do. Sometimes it would work well, sometimes it would get exposed. I mean, whatever. But there was, you felt like there was a script that they were following, something, some plan in place. They knew why they were doing things. I don't feel like you knew that on the offensive side. Whatever level of success Cliff Kingsbury has on the USC offense, there's going to be a direction, a plan. They're going to be have an identity, and that's what this offense has lacked. At least it might work, it might not, but you're going to know what they're going to be trying to do, and they're just going to do it every week.
That's a difficult thing. Was the one thing you really had control of is your offense, and if you go into every game not sure what exactly you're doing, and then you get it done in the first half, but you don't know what to do in the second half. That was really frustrating. I mean, the defense naturally has to be somewhat reactionary, but the offense, you've got control of that. And everybody says, you know, you have to control what you can control. USC didn't control their offense. It looked like it was just out of control.
Yeah.
I mean, it did, and it didn't put points on the board. And that's how you win games, with points. I mean, it's just, you know, to say, well, we had, you know, to say, for example, we had two really good drives to start the second half. We didn't score on any of them. But man, we had 12 plays and 10, you know, and you think, what are you talking about? You had two really good drives? No, yeah. You didn't. You didn't score.
Yeah. This is would you have some?
I was about to say a snarky comment. I was just about to say, does this mean we can finally retire the idea of balance as an offensive identity? Because it never was.
I think they did that in the Notre Dame game without telling anybody. They realized they're not going to run the ball against Notre Dame, so they didn't. They didn't try. They did what they did really well. The problem there was Notre Dame said, uh-oh, maybe we got to drop 8 in the second half. So they drop 8. Well, if they're playing just three down, you ought to be able to run the ball. But this team wasn't consistent enough that they could run it against Notre Dame's, you know, three guys down, because they, you know, they would make mistakes or make the wrong call or not execute physical beats.
Yeah.
Man, that if
physical beats.
If somebody, yeah, you should take that out. If I'm Lynn, I say, Clay, here's an agreement for next year. You will never say physical beats. You'll never say balance, and you'll never say, I guess situational mastery.
Yeah,
never situational mastery. And I think there's at least another one there.
Maybe the love of my life of any other player or coach on the team.
There needs to be a limit of how many times you can say, look at the tape. Like, once you get past 6 games, no more looking at the tape.
Yeah.
It's what you are, what you are.
Well, the thing, that whole tape looking thing, the flaw there was, we're going to look at the tape on Sunday, and we're going to find the mistakes and correct them. And I couldn't ever understand, how do you correct mistakes on Sunday? The players, they're not technically even there. They don't practice much. You can't correct them until Tuesday at the very earliest. But to say we watch the tape and we're correcting the mistakes, what? How?
There was always
how
a sense
that?
Of correcting cerebrally. Like, it was more of a mental thing.
Like, even down to penalties. Penalties were a mental thing.
It was like categorizing them. It was more like you're an accountant instead of a football coach.
Or you're that really bad high school teacher, and you write it on the chalkboard, and then you erase it. Penalties. And then you put draw a line through it. Okay, we corrected it. Really?
We addressed it in the meeting, so I assume all the penalties are going to go away.
Yeah, you know, we categorized them? Categorizing.
18 penalties after Arizona. And it was like, we had a meeting, and it's fixed. It's like,
And there were so many. We had to put them in three different categories
because
you couldn't address all of them at once.
Yes.
So then we had three nice categories.
And it's like, how many face mask grabs would have, taken care of that as opposed to having meetings? But whatever. Okay.
We'll get back to Cliff. We have questions about him in the Peristyle mailbag. The other thing that came out today was USC's schedule. The Pac-12 schedules were released.
Yes.
USC has two Friday games and a tough out-of-conference schedule. What were your guys' initial thoughts?
So this is really weird. The first six games are absolutely brutal. So you're talking about 11-2 Fresno State, who won the Mountain West, and Stanford at home. So this is a newly renovated Coliseum. So you open with those two games. Fresno State beat UCLA last year. They're a really good team. Coached by Jeff Tedford, former Pac-12 coach, and obviously Stanford early in the season.
He might be auditioning for the USC job in that game.
I kind of feel he's going to stay in Fresno. Like he's. I don't think he's like looking to the next job, but for the perfect opportunity, I think he would go. But Jeff Tedford turned that team one win 2 years ago, and they've won double digits the last 2 years. So absolutely amazing job by Fresno State.
And they beat Boise at Boise to win the championship.
In the snow on the blue turf, and that doesn't happen. So this is a legit team that USC is going to open the season with. You got to go rare Provo, Utah trip. I think they went in the 90s, and I went to that. And so that was scheduled in 2013. I don't really like the way it was scheduled because they scheduled a road game the same year as Notre Dame. But all three, the games are odd years, so that must have been when BYU had openings. Mm-hmm. But there's two home games. So USC gets BYU in 2021 and 23, but away in 2019, and the same year you played Notre Dame away, is tough, you know? So that I think that one's – that's partially on USC. But then you got to go on the road. You come back. You play Utah on a Friday night in the Coliseum. So they won the Pac-12 South. Then – you play the Pac-12 North winner and Pac-12 winner in Washington and Seattle on the road. You get a bye week, and then, you go play college football playoff team Notre Dame on the road. So those first six games are going to be absolutely brutal. And there are, like Keely said, there's two Friday games. So you got to go on the road to Colorado. So going to Boulder in late October.
Yep.
Nine of the 12 teams you're playing are bowl teams in 2018. So that's pretty brutal. And the weird thing now is with the schedule extended by a week, most teams have two bye weeks. Just like 2017, USC's bye week, or one of them, is at the very end of the season. So UCLA is the UCLA game at home is November 23rd. A lot of teams are playing on November 30th. USC is not. So if USC makes the Pac-12 championship game, they get a bye before that, which obviously helped them in 2017. But if not, you just get an open date at the end of the schedule. But for me, the five Saturday home games is the biggest problem. Part of that's on USC because they put BYU and Notre Dame the same year. But part of it's on the Pac-12 putting that Friday Utah game. When you have the newly renovated Coliseum, I think you want as many Saturday games as you can. USC limited by one playing BYU, but then the Pac-12 took one away as well.
Yeah, I mean, I would never use the word brutal if you're playing a Pac-12 schedule.
Fair.
Absolutely, that word would not be in the vocabulary. They are Pac-12 teams, right? Okay, it's not brutal. It's challenging. I like it. I think they need a challenging schedule. I think that's, we grew up with USC football in the Pete Carroll era on road games and challenging road games. And they loved going to those stadiums and beating people. That was the best feeling of all. That was way better than home games. Those were way better than home games. So I think they ought to, rise to the challenge. I think USC, they ought to join the big boys like Ohio State, Michigan, who when the Big Ten said, we're thinking about playing Friday games, Ohio State, Michigan said, we're not.
No.
Forget it. Don't even come near us with that stuff. USC should do that. They were in Los Angeles. We're in the middle of town. We're not playing Friday night games. I'm sorry. We're not. We're just not. Forget it. Put us off the schedule. And just tell the Pac-12, we won't do it. Don't make the schedule. And, you stand up to Larry Scott, for God's sakes. How hard is that? But nobody at USC wants to do that. But that's not for USC as a team. That's for USC's fans. That's not fair to USC's fans. They drive a lot of them all the way, all over Southern California, trying to get there for a Friday night game is not fair to USC's fans.
Yeah, the people coming from San Diego who'd make the trip all the time, you're skipping work that day.
Yeah. And so I think there are those issues. As far as I'm concerned, if you play a Friday night game the week before you go to Seattle, the advantage is you got an extra day to get ready for the game.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you got a Friday night home game, fine. In terms of competitive situations, I think USC should look at everything competitively and say, look, we're USC. Come on. We're gonna you know, be able to – and they do get a bye before Notre Dame, which I think is going to be the, you know, the biggest challenge. But you make Notre Dame adjust to you. Notre Dame struggled a little bit to adjust to USC. Had USC played, you know, kind of error-free – football, they Notre Dame's adjustments wouldn't have been in time. USC would have beaten Notre Dame. They don't, you know, drop the ball a couple of times and you know, commit some of the penalties. So I don't know that Notre Dame will have played somebody like USC. And, you know, you look at the schedule and you say, we can set the tone for a new USC football program
completely
in the first half of the season.
Yeah.
We can set it. We can, you know, as much as we don't like the Pac-12, you use the Pac-12. You say, we're going to be in the championship game every year. We're going to win the South every year. You know, I think the next USC coach that loses to UCLA should be his last game. I mean, if you lose to UCLA, you don't walk off the field.
It's in the contract.
You give up 300 and some yards on the ground to UCLA. You really don't walk off the field if you're the defense coordinator. I mean, this is what so kind of frustrating with USC right now is you don't show up for UCLA and then you show up for Notre Dame the next week. And, you know, the defense does arrive. Well, where were they the week before the UCLA game? I mean, so I just think this is a schedule where it's not about, you know, the other team. The way USC was so good is it was always about USC. So we don't care where we're playing you, when we're playing you. You got to play us. We're going to do our thing. I think that's where Kingsbury really does help. They will have a thing to do.
Yeah.
For a couple of years, USC's thing was, man, I hope Sam Darnold does something here. Other than that, what was USC's thing?
Right. That was it.
And then he left. And everything went with him.
And the one thing about the schedule, I mean, it's USC, so it's usually you're going to get some sort of boost anyway. But with Cliff Kingsbury coming on, with the kind of schedule USC has, if they make some kind of run and they beat, you know, the first four or five teams, they're going to be like in the top two or three in the country probably at that point, because they've played this really good schedule and their offense would be exciting. You can be relevant. It's not like Washington State where you're 10-1 and hoping for a whole bunch of breaks in front of you. Like, if somehow USC puts it all together and they go from 5-7 to like really freaking good, they're going to be in every conversation that you would want at national level. And that's, they haven't been nationally relevant. Now you got to win those games. You lose a bunch of those games, it doesn't really matter. But it's set up that if you win, you're going to be important again.
Yeah, and you got a chance with, you know, people will know how good Fresno has become. And they will know, you know, Stanford is Stanford. Where they're not as good as they've been. They're probably not going to be as good as they've been. But you beat Stanford, you get them at home. You ought to beat Stanford. You ought to beat Brigham Young. I mean, you just keep showing up and playing. And you get Utah at home, you know, next year. So you got a real chance to get some momentum going. And, you know, the focus, again, is on USC, not who you're playing.
Yeah.
This was the characteristics that they got from Lane and Sark, where the coaching was, well, you know, we'll come up with this really cool thing that we're going to, you know, come up with this week. And then next week we'll come up with something else. But it'll show how smart we are as coaches to come up with something to counter. Instead of come up with something for the whole year and just do it. And do it better than they can do this. They can stop you. And that's who Clay learned under, Lane and Sark. And they were more of a counterpuncher. Let's try. But it wasn't the same every week. So you were constantly changing what you did because of what the other team did.
Right.
Instead of doing what you do.
Yeah.
Kingsbury will do what he does. That's such a change in thinking.
Yeah. Huge change. And I mean, you want to talk about changing the culture? I think that's going to do it. So we're getting a lot of Periscope questions about who are they going to hire. Is this guy who they, you know, this was the big domino that needed to fall. We already talked about that. There's probably going to be some more changes because you're bringing in someone that has his own system and probably wants to have a lot of his own guys. So we'll see. We still don't even have the official announcement yet. I think Joey Kaufman, we email sports information and they're saying that, no announcement's been made. Like, yes, we know no announcement's been made, but when will it be made? People are asking that. We're not really sure. So it's, then now that you know that it's definitely been agreed upon and that's where the direction they're going, now it's really contract stuff and make sure everything gets signed and all that. And then when they ever want to release it. So we'll see about that.
I mean, the downside now is if it doesn't happen, you know, the losses to Notre Dame and UCLA will look like nothing.
Yeah,
if they don't get Kingsbury now. I mean the implosion would be, forget the renovation.
Then it would be an internal mess up of epic proportions. Yeah,
what's all going to come?
I think they cleared all the outside influences or hurdles and things, and now it's just make sure you get the ink to dry.
They're in a position right now that Kingsbury and company could demand almost anything, and you would say,
yeah,
whatever you want.
All right. Do we have questions? So just let people know, this was our normal Peristyle podcast time. Keely and I were going to be in studio. We thought Dan was going to be calling in, but Dan came. So we're like, oh, let's try to broadcast it live. So that's why we're doing this at the last sort of minute. So we're still the Peristyle podcast, so we're going to answer some podcast questions, I think.
Yeah, it's a hybrid of the Peristyle podcast and Tunnel Vision. But we have a question from Troy Trojan, who says, Cliff Kingsbury may be offensive coordinator. Great. So now they may have a schematic advantage. A new scheme is like 15th on the list. How is that going to work when the play can't start because the O-line gets a false start? Or wide receivers are running into each other because they were not paying attention in install? Or the running back fumbles on slight contact? Or your tight ends can't block on the edge because they have no upper body strength because your strength and conditioning coach does not think that's important? Or. He says the fish rots from the head.
Yeah, I mean, it's an easy case to make, and it's not the wrong case necessarily. I don't think you can do what Kingsbury wants to do unless you do it enough in practice at game tempo, game speed. So I think that gets them past some of this. I think they will limit the things they're going to ask their offensive linemen to do. So I think that gets them to a better place than trying to ask them to be able to, do every block that you need done. You know, you're going to limit it and say, look, we know we've got some limitations. So I think that gets you ahead of the game. You're right. But I think they need, and this is, we haven't gotten to this yet, I think they need a dedicated head of strength and conditioning who looks like that guy at Alabama or who looks like that guy at Notre Dame. That was the first thing they did at Notre Dame is Brian Kelly. It had his longtime from decades, back coaching buddy. And he said, maybe this isn't for you. And they got a new strength and conditioning guy who they gave the game ball to after the USC game. That's how much that guy meant to him.
Wow.
So I think if you've got a situation at USC where they're responsible for all 21 sports, I think you need someone who's football. That's all he does. That's all he cares about. And same thing for nutrition. This whole, we're in it for everybody. And, no, you're not. You got to have somebody that's doing football. Football and, say, lacrosse, that's not the same deal.
Yeah.
You've got to get it right with football. You got to find out. I would just think they would, they said Notre Dame. They brought up Notre Dame. What does Notre Dame do for nutrition? Go and find out how much do they spend, how many people do it, the facility that they've got that does it, how many hours is it open a day, how much access do the players have to it, all that. USC has to do that. They just have to do that. So that's, it's not one thing, but it's the one. See, I don't think it was the 15th most. I think the offense was the biggest problem of all this year. If you had to pick out one part of the team, obviously those other things went into the offense. But I think if you cure the offense, you cure a lot of ills.
And this is more than, it's not just switching playbooks. This is more than that. This is changing. You're installing a system. You're bringing in, and we talked about this a million times, you're bringing in a guru. You're bringing in someone who learned from the altar of people that were geniuses as far as offense goes. And Clay Helton didn't have that. He was learning from like Sark and Kiffin, where they didn't learn that either. Like people say, well, Norm Chow, they didn't learn, they weren't running Norm Chow's offense. They were running what the flavor of the day was. I mean, that what people were using, just trying to run it without someone that's that grew up with it or created it, teaching them that. And this is from that tree of this air raid kind of system that he's adopted to his own. He's been very effective. So I think you're changing more than just the playbook. And we also talked about that too. I'm no strength and conditioning expert. I can't tell you if Ivan Lewis is the best or the worst. I have no idea. But if you want to talk about changing the culture, he is the guy, and that group is with the players more than anybody, than the coaches. That seems like a place to, if you want to make a change, if you're really talking about changing the culture, that's such a big part of it that you almost would have to change that.
Yeah, and it might be you just say, you don't have to do it for the other 20 sports. You just do it for football. And you get somebody else, you know, the rest of them will take the other 20 sports. But you don't make that person also be responsible for all the sports.
Yeah.
Or whatever. However, you just change the focus. You know, the same thing with, you know, with nutrition, where you don't have to, you know, the same person who's doing football doesn't have to be planning for women's soccer, let's say. You know, you just focus on it. And you spend the money, you know, on whatever it takes. I mean, if you're going to want to compete and talk about competing with Notre Dame, you got to do what Notre Dame does. I mean, they're a private school. They're not as big as USC. You have to say, if that's what it takes, that's what we're going to do. And you just do it.
Do they want to, though? I feel like we see a reluctance.
Well, the other thing I think is, this is one of the reasons I was sort of infatuated with, say, a Bob Stoops, if he decided to come out of retirement, is he doesn't come here and say, well, could we do this? Or would it be possible? No, he says, this is what you do.
Yeah.
Cliff Kingsbury, this is what you do. This is how you do it. He's not like asking for permission to be able to do that. Or, you know, a guy like Stoops would say, no. This is how many guys you got to have in the recruiting support
staff.
Right, yeah. This is, and you don't ask. You just say, well, it's USC, right? You guys are going to do what you say you're going to do, right? Well, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
You don't ask for permission.
No, and I think there's a decent chance of that happening, Keeley, because what we talked about earlier with Lynn Swann, the kind of outrage that he saw from this, he knows he needs to make this successful to make him look better. I mean, he's riding with Clay Helton. So if they only have three or four guys on the recruiting support staff and Clay's like, hey, we need more, or if Kingsbury comes in and says, this is stupid, we had twice as many at Texas Tech, then it's like, how could you say no at that point? You're like, you really are tied to the success of Clay Helton. So my guess is he's going all in, and they're going to spend money on Cliff Kingsbury. They're going to have to spend money everywhere, too.
Yeah, I don't think he asked for permission anymore.
Yeah, and Clay just says, we're doing it, too.
Just have to, you know, and if Clay can spend more time doing that, you know, saying, you know, these are the priorities. I mean, as much as we kind of got nervous about Lane Kiffin, Lane had a book that was that thick, his plan. And, you know, a big part of Lane's plan was he knew they were going to be really low in scholarship.
Yeah.
And we had Lane was a really good, that was a good plan. And it was a good, you know, I mean, Lane wasn't necessarily always the right guy to get it done because he shot himself in the foot as many times as he could. But he had a plan. And he didn't ask for permission. He just said, this is what we have to do. And I think that's how you have to run the USC program. And I think the fact that Lynn had no idea what was going to hit him after he made the call and the way he did it the last few weeks. And one of the problems at USC is there was no one whispering in his ear saying, Lynn, that's not going to go over well.
Yeah.
That's really going to come back. And nobody, there is no one at USC that usually is there to tell you, can't do that. That really isn't going to work.
Yeah.
And so you have to get, you know, hit in the face after something like that. But
you need that sometimes. You know, we all get in our own little worlds, and you just think that everyone's thinking like you do.
Well, you're in a bubble. If you're at USC right now in some sort of, you know, administrative, you're kind of in a bubble until you really, somebody comes and smacks you and burst the bubble, which has happened three or four times in the last year at all different levels for USC, but it's happening in football.
Yeah. And we've seen that in the Pac-12 with Larry Scott, where he's preaching from the and the people around him are keeping that same message, and then when he goes up on stage, he just gets booed. I think there's this, there's this protection there, and Lynn Swann's a person, he hasn't been in this position ever before. I mean, I don't know How many people have ever told Lynn Swann no before? Like, he's probably never had to create a resume and got it. I mean, he's
there's the voters so many in Pennsylvania did. But
they did tell that, him no. Yes.
He may not have listened to them either.
But this is, you know, he's someone that's just been successful at everything his whole life. This is obviously a different story. And yes, you're a Hall of Famer and all that kind of stuff, but sometimes you got to listen to other people around you. And I don't think he did. And that it looks like he's getting the message now, because they're changing. This is a change in direction of how they've done things. So I'll give them credit for that. I mean, we can pan out a lot of these decisions and stuff, but there seems like, at least right now, they're going all in on this. And I think USC was close. Like, they were 5-7, but they're still more talented than everybody. If you just fix a few things, you're going to get a lot better. And this potentially could make them a lot better.
And I do think USC is different in some ways. For example, I would guess, even if you throw in all the big Southeastern Conference schools, I'm not sure that any one of those has had back-to-back athletic directors who belong to the Masters Club. You know, how many schools had, you know, overlapping athletic directors, both had memberships at Augusta? I don't know that how many, you know?
USC, that's a requirement, like play football at USC and be a member of Augusta. As you're,
be a national, you know, broadcaster, and then and you get into Augusta. And that puts you in a little bit of a different place. And if everybody around you is not telling you that's not going to go well,
right?
Then you just proclaim, you know, as Lynn did on that, you know, Tuesday night, the radio show. Oh. He just proclaimed to the USC fans what they should do. No, they have other options. And one of the things I think when you look at the schedule, people have options now not to buy season tickets. Because they can say, I'm not going to that game on Friday night, not going to this game, I don't care about that one, and I'll go to StubHub or SeatGeek or whoever, and I'll buy tickets for UCLA and Notre Dame or whatever, and maybe I'll go to a road game or two. But they don't have to buy season tickets.
No.
So you got to be really good to get people to invest, you know, and then they got to pay the extra $3,000, you know, sort of a seat license deal, a renovation tax or whatever. You got to be really good to ask people to do that, especially when they're getting, you know, jerked around with these schedules.
Yeah. And you go to the Rams, you can go to the Chargers. They're both, like, you know, two of the best teams in the NFL right now. So there's a lot going on. UCLA's on the rise. So
Dodgers are going to the World Series every fall.
Yeah.
And you got LeBron, you know, practices starting, you know, with the Lakers.
The Clippers, I think, still have the best record in the Western Conference, like, or did, you know.
They're pretty good.
You picked the wrong year to go 5-7.
Right. And I think you kind of realize that. And the donors and the non-renewals and all those things, I think that all has had an impact. So maybe it was tone deaf for sure the way he was speaking to everyone. But I think the message seems to be getting in there, at least.
I mean,
now.
The hardest thing at USC is, even if somebody knows they need to tell you this, that might require them to change what they're doing and how they do it. And people are really comfortable at USC right now, you know? I mean, do you get a sense there's an edge about how do we compete? You felt really good about Notre Dame, and I know this is, you know, USC fans don't want to hear that. I like it that Notre Dame decided we're not going to accept this. We're going to turn things around. We're going to work hard. We're going to get better, and we're going to compete. That's great. That's what it's all about. USC, we haven't seen that in a long time.
Yeah.
We have multiple questions asking, what does this mean for the quarterback situation? Do you think Cliff will come in and declare an open battle, or is JT still the guy?
JT's still the guy, but you ought to have a battle. I mean, obviously Jack Sears came through in the Arizona State game, 20-28 or whatever. And you want to have a couple of guys. As Alabama proved, you better have a couple of guys who can play. And give Jack, you know, a really good year next year, I think. And then with the ability to, you know, transfer if he wants as a grad student, if Jack can get his, you know, degree and then have 2 years somewhere else. But I think, you know, I wouldn't be, you know, like, well, we're going to just take it away from JT. I think he's perfect for what they try to do, what, you know, Cliff Kingsbury is going to try to do.
I mean, he's
the gunslinger who can make all the throws. And it wasn't his fault in a lot of ways that they didn't take advantage of all his skill set this year. And then there were other things you would like to see. he learned a little. It's hard to learn it, though, if you're constantly trying to play the goalie and knock the snap down. I think Kingsbury, for example, will have the ability to go in August and say, that guy's not snapping the ball to my quarterback. I want my quarterback to be able to put his hands there and watch the field every single play. I don't want him to have to turn his head ever. And that didn't happen this year.
Yeah.
And you go in and say, I don't care if he's the love of your life or not. He's not centered on my offense. Those little things, I think, make a big difference. And I don't think that will happen this year.
No. And I think whoever Cliff Kingsbury wants to be the quarterback will be the quarterback. I mean, he sat Baker Mayfield, who ended up winning the Heisman Trophy. So if you can bench a Heisman Trophy winner, he can certainly bench whoever the heck he wants. My guess is, like Dan said, I think it'll be JT Daniels. But, who knows? If he sees something in Jack Sears or Matt Fink that he really likes, I don't see anyone stopping him from doing that.
So we got a question from Nick, and he notes how we didn't actually get to talk to Dan last week when everything went down with the coaching purge. He wants to know, Dan, were you surprised by who was fired and who was kept?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense just by itself. I mean, if you said USC was 5-7, let's get rid of T. Martin and BKU. You go, what? What's the connection there? I mean, that was the problem? I mean, so I don't know if we knew what the plan. My one guess was the plan was maybe to take all the defensive people out and leave Johnny Nansen for recruiting and what have you, but that basically you would have an entirely new defense. And somehow, maybe the person they thought they could get, they couldn't get, who maybe wanted to bring some of his own people here. And so Clancy is still there. It doesn't look like it's a part of a big picture, exactly. And you could say, well, BKU and T. Martin maybe have the ability to go somewhere else, and both of them have indicated that might be the case. But there has to be more of a plan here. Now, yeah. If you wanted to say, we really think we were going to get Kingsbury, therefore, you probably don't want somebody like T who would still have, I was the offensive coordinator, now I'm whatever. And you might want to say to to Kingsbury coming in, you get to completely redo the offense.
Yeah.
Would be more my thinking. Where that leaves Drevno, I don't know.
Yeah. I'm kind of guessing he's going to bring in maybe his guy or someone that's familiar with the air raid is for the offensive line. That's what I would guess. And I don't think you're going to leave Drevno at running backs.
For sure not. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
And coaching at Michigan without a quarterback is probably not a way to get you ready to coach the offensive line in the air raid. Just thinking that's.
So we'll see. So I'm assuming, Nick, there's going to be some more changes.
So we got multiple questions about this. Dan, what do you say to fans who are concerned that USC will basically become Washington State 2.0 with an air raid type offense?
Well, it'll be that with better players. I mean, that's the advantage USC's got is certainly better. They'll have better access to receivers. They'll have better running backs who can make plays on their own. And they should have a better quarterback, although, who knows? Washington State does it with they turned Gardner Minshew into a really good, really, really good quarterback. They turned the Texas Tech kids into really good quarterbacks, and you're not getting the best, kids in the country to go to Texas Tech. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with the JT Daniels and Cliff Kingsbury if they, go together.
Every quarterback he touches gets way better.
I'm sure, I don't know that he had anybody like an Amon-Ra coming in as a freshman, how many programs in the country did. So I look at that. I don't care, you talk about Washington State. I mean, people in the NFL now are running a lot of the air raid concepts and that. So I just think it's going. It also makes sense in terms of the kind of players you can recruit. I mean, we've seen where the talent base at USC is gone over the years. I mean, I thought it was the SEC was getting crazy when they realized that you had Robert Woods and Marquise Lee. I'm trying to think of the other kid that was an all-world five-star.
Oh, George Farmer.
George Farmer. Those guys could have taken a bus from, you know, like 20 minutes away and come to the USC campus. There were more five-star receivers within a bus ride of USC's campus than maybe in the whole SEC. And it was like, this isn't fair. It's just the way it is in Southern California.
There's a lot of receivers.
If you've got those guys and you've got the quarterbacks and you don't have the offensive linemen, so it doesn't make sense. I mean, the other night coming out of the Notre Dame game and looking at Ron Yeary, 71, 72 years old, he's more scary looking right now than any offensive lineman USC's got. I mean, I don't know where those guys went.
Yeah.
They're not here anymore.
If you don't know, he's an Outland Trophy winner, blocked for O.J. Simpson for his Heisman Trophy and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
I think the first year for him, but he was the first pick of the NFL draft.
First Outland Trophy winner on the West Coast. And then USC just was getting all the, you know, the Anthony Munoz, all these 6'7" guys who could run and good. I don't see them.
But for the question, too, it's not – this isn't going to be – don't look at the run-pass ratio of Washington State. It's more of a – not balance for the sake of balance, but there is a lot more running of the football in this. So it's – yes, it's spreading everything out, and they can throw the ball over the field, but there's a lot more running involved than what you're seeing from Mike Leach. So it's definitely been adopted, at least what Cliff Kingsbury has been running at Texas Tech.
Yeah, and 10-2, you know, Washington State wasn't all that bad. They get beat in the snow, unfortunately for them. They're in Pullman. And USC was allowed that game to kind of play Washington State's game. And they ended up with 3 more points and, you know, blocked the kick at the end. But USC ought to be able to do that better than Washington State can do it. And if it works for Washington State, it ought to work for USC better.
Yeah.
So while we were on the air, the Pac-12 actually released their all Pac-12 conference football team. Okay. The only USC player to make it was Chuma Adoga, who made it on the second team offense.
Wow. So no first or second team all academic Trojans, which is kind of sad. If you're not doing that well, you should at least have some smart guys on the team.
But they haven't done well for a while there. They've had very few academic people at USC.
Sorry. And then second team defense is Porter Gustin, J. Tufele, Cameron Smith, and Iman Marshall. So some second teamers, but no first team on defense. Yeah.
Yeah. It was funny for Porter Gustin to play half the year and still have, I mean, 7 sacks. Like he was in the clubhouse with a pretty big number. It was going to be hard for anyone. I don't know who led the nation or who led the conference.
I'm looking it up right now.
Yeah. Cause I think it might still be Porter Gustin.
Like, he was
like a month after he was out. I don't know if it's still the case, but it was spread out more than like a team like Washington. They got more guys that had like a bunch of guys having sacks as opposed to one or two. And for you.
So Porter Gustin ended 2018 with the third most sacks in the Pac-12, and he was out for half of the season.
Wow. Okay. Who are the other? Do you have the other two there?
Bradley Anai of Utah.
Yeah.
With eight sacks, and
so he just got it. And they had played an extra game. I think he got one in the championship game. Okay.
And then the Colorado. Was second. So yeah.
Nice. Yeah, there's some tough names. Porter's easier to pronounce there. But yeah, that's not good either. One second team offensive player. All the 5 stars USC has on that side of the ball. And that's why hiring Cliff Kingsbury is a big deal. It's an offense designed when you don't have as good of players as your opponent. And what everyone wants to know is, well, what if you get the best players that you assume USC has? What will this offense do?
I mean, I think it's one of the reasons he's here.
Like,
and we assume he's going to be here because we're assuming what the people at USC are assuming right now. We're assuming he's on board.
Yeah.
But
90th in scoring is not good enough. Like, there's no way.
There is no way we can say how bad the USC offense was this year.
It was awful.
I mean, it was the worst coach group. I mean,
yeah. And it wasn't T. Martin. Like, the people are like, you should fire T. Martin. He was not he didn't call the plays the last month of the season. It was still awful. Like, it was the design. It was not a well-conceived offense.
Well, and then on top of it, they practiced poorly.
Yeah.
Okay. So you didn't put it together well, and then you practiced it badly. Well, what's left.
Yeah.
Or they had no game plan afterwards. Because we saw some games where the first script that they had, the first drive of the game, they looked great. Yeah. And then afterwards it was like, and that's what they did in practice. They had one thing ready and then no adjustments really, yeah. Nothing else. So, I mean, we had multiple questions. I know Dan has mentioned that it's almost a guarantee that if Cliff comes, practice will be harder. But people say, can you really say that? What if Clay
I think it'll be faster. It'll be more competitive. Will they hit anymore? I don't know. I mean, I think by accident, people will run into one another more. I just think if they come out and be more competitive, which I think they will, because they have to do that on offense, because they got to get all those concepts down. They got to keep running them and running them and running them so they don't have to think about it. I mean, USC was a team that spent a lot of time thinking about stuff, thinking about getting rid of the penalties, thinking about, what am I supposed to do on this defense, Mr. Clancy? If I screw up, are they going to score a long touchdown? Well, yes, son, they are. The other 10 will be right, but if you make a mistake, boom, they're gone.
Score a touchdown.
And so there was a lot of thinking going on, and you want to eliminate that. So practice, I think, will be better just because it has to be for Kingsbury's offense to be, you know, ready to go.
Yeah.
So, you know. We'll see, but it would be hard to imagine you would, you know, and then it was hard to imagine you could sabotage this offense right. This year, no matter what, as badly as they did, and they did.
Go ahead.
It's fine. This doesn't fix everything, but it's definitely a step in the right direction, and that's what you want. There's probably more coming. I don't think this is it, but this was a big move. You saw across town. You saw UCLA. Get the guy that Florida wanted, and you know, all the SEC schools, they wanted Chip Kelly, and UCLA got him. UCLA hadn't done this stuff like that before. USC really hadn't either, and now they're doing it. So you know, maybe the Chip Kelly hire and losing to UCLA inspired this. Like, hey, we have to go out and get the people. We're getting somebody. This is what I always say. Like, what does he have any ties to USC? Does he know the fight song? No. Is he really good at his job? Yes. That's all I've ever said.
I hit a footnote there. He does have a really big tie to USC. Arash Markazi.
Okay, yes. He's buddies with Matt Leiner, too, I think.
Okay.
But that's all you have to do. It's just not that hard. Like, go hire somebody who's good at their job. What was the Departed is a great one. I think it's like Marky Mark is in there. He's like, oh, who are you? I can't remember the line, but it's like, I'm the guy that's good at my job. You must be the other guy. You know, like that's what USC's been getting, the other guy, and you want Marky Mark, the guy that's good at his job. Cliff Kingsbury's good at his job. Just go hire that guy. I'm not saying every time you do it's going to work, but you have a much better chance of success if you hire the good guy than the hope guy. You know, and this is not a hope guy. This is a good guy.
You got, that's another word you got to not say.
Hope. Yeah.
Hope. Hopefully. No.
Hopefully we'll have a few meetings and everything will work.
Yeah. Well, considering the alternative, USC could not have Cliff and be stuck with some USC retread, but it's not. Or USC could just done well enough where you don't see major changes. You know, if 2017, if it was like 7-5, would Clay Helton be forced to make big changes? I don't know if we would see that. I mean, I've said this in the past week, is the big thing this offseason is if this coaching staff will take a hard look at themselves, and Dan and I have talked about it, and be realistic about what is wrong and what went wrong, yeah, and how they can fix it.
But there's the word that should be a factor now, reality.
Yes.
And a reality-based coaching staff. Because you would talk and they would tell you that the run game was better than it was, or this week it was. Okay, we had three straight games where it wasn't, but this week I thought we really, no. I think they have to make reality-based decisions. Cliff Kingsbury is a reality-based decision about where this football program is.
Yeah. I had one comment on Periscope. Let me get it real quick. He said, this is from USC, go. Instead of beating a dead horse, let's talk about recruiting next season, etc. I mean, it hasn't even been signed yet. Like, this hasn't even physically happened yet. So it's not, I don't know how we're beating a dead horse when this is just the reports are coming out now. This is the biggest news, that the most positive that people have been around USC football basically all season. So this is a big deal. And USC fans want to know, is this going to be the changes that need to be made. I don't think it's enough, but I think it's a just by doing this, you're going to be a much better team next
and
year.
And recruiting can't fall off, but USC's got enough young talent that they got to coach them up and really get better on the field. If you had to take a break and say you're not going to have a top four or top five class one year, this might be the year to do it. You know, I don't know that you should ever do that, but I think the focus can't be there. The focus has been on the recruiting and been about the only focus the last few years. And what's the payoff there? There hasn't been a payoff because their program wasn't good enough for the recruits. Now make the program good, and you've got enough talent in the pipeline right now at USC. Whatever you get this year is kind of a bonus, but I don't know.
Cliff will help on the recruiting trail for sure. Like right now they've got, you know, so you see like the pictures like Gavin Morris is out there, Lenny Vandermaid. I mean, just any, you know, Eric Ziskin, like support staff people are out there on the road. So once you fill up the staff, you'll get there a little bit.
John Baxter and Clancy Pendergast is like, whoa, look who's in that picture. You know, you widen out
you don't
the picture
see that normally.
And you say, whoa, when did I last see one of those guys on the
But now you get like, so that picture with, you know, Gavin Morris would Instagram out like him playing dominoes or something on a private plane. Well, now Cliff Kingsbury's on that plane. It's going to be a little bit different too when you're, so I think, you know, I think you. I don't. Recruiting's not going to be hurt by this. I think it'll certainly help. And you wanted to get something done as quickly as you can because December 19th is the early signing period. So you still got 2 weeks left for that. And I think this definitely helps.
All right, without a doubt. I mean, it says we're not going to accept what just happened.
Yeah.
And you have to. You can't just say that. Nobody will believe you. You've got to actually do something that says we're not accepting that. And we're doing something that's going to force us to change. And even though we're USC, we're going to, you know, we're going to change some things. I don't want them to put names on the back of the jerseys or wear black socks. But change.
Black socks.
God forbid.
Change black some of the socks. Coaches is fine with me.
Yeah.
We've reached the top of the hour. Any final thoughts you guys want to add to our simulcast?
Yeah. Well, thanks for everyone tuning in and everything. We had looks like a bunch of people. Wow, YouTube came on strong afterwards. We had like almost 300 people for a late thing. So, the podcast people, thank you for listening. Sorry, it was a little weirder. Maybe the sound's going to be different because we're using different microphones and everything. And thanks for the people that are watching live or anyone watching the replay. But these, I think we'll try to do these more. Maybe not take 5 minutes to plan it, you know, but I think overall this is as critical. I've been as critical as anybody.
I think the good thing was literally everybody was critical.
Yeah.
It wasn't just us. It wasn't just, you know, we were on an island. Who didn't get critical?
Right.
I mean, nationally, locally, whatever. It was a total wipeout. And,
but even if this fell through, this was, to me, some people are like, oh, it'd be a disaster. Like, yeah, but it was a shift in the way, just the way you would do business. Like, to actually go after the biggest name out there instead of promoting a graduate assistant or going and get somebody from Western Kentucky or something. Like, that's not this. Like, this is a much different move. This is all you would ask, is just try to act like USC.
Well,
try
USC,
to get someone that's at the USC caliber. And
USC
they haven't been doing
has
that.
Been so risk averse. I mean, they just didn't want to take a chance. They didn't want to go out on that limb because somebody might saw it off. You know,
right.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
So they were,
you know, you're afraid of being told no.
Yeah.
Know?
And so, this, you know, give them credit for that. I mean, to say the least.
It's a big move. And and people are talking about, well, is he going to be like the head coach in waiting? And so I don't, it's hard to picture what's going to happen, but I don't necessarily see that. Like if he helps the offense and turns the team around, you're not changing your head coach because if they go win 10 games, like you're probably not making any kind of move there. So I think this is great for everybody. I think it will instill a different sort of offensive mindset at USC. And even if he only sticks around for 1 year and then goes get a head coaching job somewhere else, I don't think you wouldn't go back to the gumbo. You would get someone that would continue what that success was. So I think you've stopped. There was some bad habits there, and I think this will break them. And then no matter what the future of Cliff Kingsbury is, he has success, I think you're going to want to try to repeat that success and not go back to, well, let's do it back the way we did it, because I'm like, no, this was completely different.
And I think the other thing, it forces you to really take a serious look at DFEB, because one of the, you know, the flaws in Oregon's, you know, under Chip Kelly was the more, you know, the quicker they scored, the more plays they ran, the more their defense was on the field. And they didn't really have great defenses. And they have a lot of players. USC's going to have to rethink now, what are we going to do on defense?
Yeah.
And how do we rotate guys in? And how complex do we make it? Or, you know, do we get more sound? And do we figure out how to get all our talent on the field? And how do we get the young guys ready to play fairly quickly so that we've got enough of a rotation? So I think in some ways having, you know, Kingsbury change the offense forces them to think about how do we change the defense.
Yeah.
All righty.
Anything else, Kaylee?
We should probably wrap it up.
You're going to do some recruiting work.
I know. Yeah. I'm about to head down to San Juan, Capistrano, near McLean. Yeah.
That's
why we moved up the podcast.
Yeah, we moved it up. We moved it up a little bit. Yeah, so we moved up the time of the podcast an hour. And Dan just happened to come in the studio. We're like, oh, let's do it late. So we might try to do these more, you know, especially in the off season, like if you don't mind coming out.
Yeah.
And we definitely got a lot of people watching live, like sometimes.
True, for something impromptu, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I was like, all right, so we'll make sure we clean up some of that stuff.
Do you think there's any chance we could corral Gerard Martinez in here?
Are there people asking for that too?
Yeah.
He's way out in the Inland Empire, but yeah, we should get him for one of these.
That would be interesting for sure.
Yeah, get Gerard on camera and stuff. He likes to stay in his, you know, he plays his video games and does his recruiting, all that stuff. But he was pretty, I mean, he was tweeting some funny stuff this morning because he's, you know, his sources were maintained the whole time because he's the one that broke it for us that Cliff Kingsbury was signing. But his, you know, the people he talked to maintained the whole time, and people we talked to around USC seemed really optimistic the whole time. It's just the other people, you know, his agents or whatever were spreading other things. So whatever, it looks like we don't know when it's going to happen. It's a good thing for USC. Yeah, it's pretty good. But we had a lot of stuff today.
Yeah.
Cliff Kingsbury, the Pac-12 schedule and all the weird quirks with that. I guess the Pac-12 All-American teams or whatever that USC didn't do that well on. I think that'll change next year. Like, instantly, like, if JT Daniels starts, like, people are talking about this on Twitter. Like, he's going to be the all-time leader at USC passing yards, like for one season. Like he'll set a record next year. I would, almost certainly.
You would think. Yeah.
Which is kind of crazy. All right. Well, I guess we're going to wrap it up.
One last thing. Remember last week, Jesse, who watched Disney, he watched us when he was at Disney on Ice. He just reported that he got in trouble for that. Jesse, we thank you though.
Sorry, Jesse, but that was awesome that you watched that on Disney on Ice. Oh, that was that the Brooks one? The Sports by Brooks?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So
very nice. Which we've had some impromptu things on the tunnel vision.
Every time we move something in the last week, it's breaking news has happened, and it's been a coincidence. We haven't moved anything because of it, but
no, yeah,
you never know.
That was good. All right, well, that's going to wrap it up. That's Kaylee Orr, Dan Weber. I'm Ryan Abraham. Thanks for tuning in to the Peristyle Podcast /Tunnel Vision, and we'll talk to you next time.
You may have noticed that shopping at Trader Joe's is unlike shopping at other markets. People ask us all the time how we manage to have such unique, interesting and delicious products at such great everyday prices. This is Dan Bain of Trader Joe's. The answer is simple. It's all in the way we do business. We buy directly from the manufacturer whenever possible. This helps to keep our costs low, and we pass those savings on to you. No gimmicks, just great values at honest prices every day at Trader Joe's. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.